You're listening to Two Harbors Community Radio on 99.5 FM, KTWH LP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. Good morning, and welcome to Conservation Corner, a program produced by the Lake County Soil and Water Conservation District, where we talk to various natural resource professionals and discuss issues facing our waters and our forests here on the North Shore. I'm your host, Emily Nelson, and today I have the honor of talking to Dr. Lee Frelick at his office in St. Paul. We will be discussing invasive earthworms and their impacts on our forests. Dr. Frelick is the director of the University of Minnesota Center for Forest Ecology, and he has conducted a lot of research on the impact of invasive earthworms in Minnesota. Thank you for joining me, Dr. Frelick.
Thank you for inviting me. It's nice to be here.
So I think a lot of people will be surprised to learn that Minnesota doesn't have any native earthworms. We always learn about them in school, and it seems like they're an integral part of the soil ecosystem.
Yeah, that's right. There are no native earthworms in Minnesota. We have other types of worms that are native to Minnesota, but no earthworms. Almost all of our earthworms are from Europe. So they were brought over by European settlers in the late 1800s. Into settled areas, farms and cities, and in more recent times they've been spread to remote areas by their use as fishing bait.
Okay, and why is it that we don't have any native earthworms here?
Probably because our native earthworms in North America live in warmer climates, so you find them like, say, if you draw a line from Des Moines, Iowa, over to Boston, and south of that line, there are native earthworms. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could also be that they were pushed out by the glaciers and they migrate so slowly that they just have not made their way back to Minnesota, or probably both, you know, that they're not as cold tolerant as the European worms, and they were pushed out by the glaciers. Those probably both contribute.
How have our forests been functioning without any worms?
Well, without earthworms, there is a thick duff layer or leaf litter layer. Earthworms are detritivores, which means that they eat dead leaves. And without earthworms, our leaf litter layer becomes very thick. And so our northern forests without earthworms have several inches of leaf litter, and that's many years accumulation of old leaves. So the new leaves fall on top each year, and then they kind of compress the older leaves underneath, and which are increasingly fragmented by other fauna living in the soil, millipedes and beetles and other things. And then they slowly decay into humus. So you have fresh leaves and then fragmented leaves and then this black humus layer. And then right underneath that, there's usually a white layer and then a red layer. So the horizons of the soils are very complicated in the absence of earthworms. Mm-hmm. And then when the worms invade from Europe, they eat that leaf litter layer and all those horizons go away and you just have one thick black A horizon on the top of the soil, which can be 10 or 15 inches thick, and all the organic matter from the leaves is eaten by the worms and then mixed in with the soil. Mm-hmm. And that changes the function quite a bit, because when the leaf litter is present, it insulates the soil during the summer and keeps it cooler. So our soils are actually getting warmer now during the summer without that insulation. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there's more drought stress, because with warmer soils, water evaporates more. And there's also more runoff, because the rain used to soak into that leaf litter and then slowly go in the soil. Without the leaf litter, it's hitting directly on the mineral soil, so there's more runoff. Mm-hmm. So between the increased runoff and the warmer temperatures, there's more drought stress on plants. And then there's a lot of plant species that are rooted in the leaf litter, mm-hmm. like trilliums and a lot of our native orchid species. And so those are having a tough time after the earthworms invade.
How are seedlings and small trees affected?
Yeah, seedlings of certain tree species do better after the earthworms invade, and other tree species do worse. And one of the ones that is very negatively impacted is sugar maple. Sugar maple seedlings like to germinate in thick leaf litter. That's what they're adapted to. Mm-hmm. And when the worms invade and the leaf litter disappears, their abundance goes down by about 99%. Oh, wow. So the layer of sugar maple seedlings on the forest floor becomes very sparse. Mm-hmm. And the adult sugar maple trees are very sensitive as well. They show highly increased sensitivity to drought. And we're finding a 30% reduction in the growth rates of adult sugar maples. And so they're producing less seeds. And those seeds that do fall on the forest floor are much less likely to do well in the presence of earthworms.
Yeah, I've heard that sugar maples and also basswoods are very vulnerable to earthworm invasions. How about northern forests up around Lake County?
Well, the boreal forest, which is the cold climate forest where you have the spruce and the fir and the paper birch and aspen, mm-hmm. That forest is also affected, although the spruce stands are not invaded for the most part because the spruce litter is too acidic for the earthworms. Mm-hmm. But they will invade forests that have a fair amount of aspen and birch mixed in with the spruce and fir, which, as you know, is very common.
Yeah.
And so they'll invade those and they'll eat the litter of the birch and the aspen, and the litter layer will still get thinner.
Huh.
The magnitude is not quite what it is in sugar maple forests, but it will still have some of these impacts. It will still warm the soil. It'll still make it more nutrient poor. It'll still increase drought stress on the trees.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not quite to the magnitude, but as the climate's warming, we're also seeing a big invasion of red maple into the forests in northern Minnesota. And red maple has ideal leaves for earthworms. Earthworms really love to eat the leaves of red maple. So as they invade, the earthworm population explodes and these effects get bigger. It kind of almost works with global warming to allow red maple, which is a temperate species, to invade the boreal forest.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard that there are some synergistic relationships between earthworms and also white-tailed deer, as well as invasive plants.
Yeah, there are a lot of synergies that earthworms have. So with deer, what happens is there are a number of native plant species and tree seedlings that are reduced in abundance when the worms invade, when you have that wave of disturbance going across the forest floor, but there's still the same number of deer. So there's more deer to eat each remaining plant. And so the impact of browsing by deer on plants and tree seedlings is greatly exaggerated by the earthworms. And then the invasive plants synergy is quite interesting. I mean, basically earthworms are co-evolved with things like buckthorn and garlic mustard on their home continent.
Yeah.
And so they're adapted to get along with each other. Uh-huh. And we found that earthworms highly facilitate the invasion of buckthorn, for example. And so our buckthorn problem that we have in central Minnesota, which hasn't quite reached the very northern part of the state yet, but mm-hmm. the central part of the state, that's probably an effect of the earthworm invasion. And furthermore, buckthorn is the overwintering host for soybean aphids. So in central and southern Minnesota, where soybeans are grown, there's actually a whole cascade of ecological effects, starting with the earthworm invasion, then the buckthorn invasion, and then the soybean aphids that affect the growth of soybeans. And furthermore, soybean aphids are the food source for Asian lady beetles, which gather on people's house in the fall and cause allergies for people. So you have an ecological cascade that extends from earthworm invasion in rural areas affecting nearby farm fields and cascading into the city where people have allergies from all these lady beetles.
Interesting. I've never heard of an allergy to lady beetles. Are there any beneficial effects of earthworms, for example, on croplands?
Yeah, there are some beneficial impacts on corn, especially because in cornfields, earthworms decompact the soil and allow more rain to infiltrate the soil. But you're starting with soils that have been plowed for years, and they're quite hard to begin with, whereas forest soils are very low in density.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very spongy, and the worms actually compact forest soils. So they have opposite effects depending on whether they're invading in an agricultural field or in a forest.
Do you know how many species of earthworms there are in Minnesota?
Let's see. I know of, I think there are 18 species in total of exotic earthworms that have been found in Minnesota. Now, only about 8 of those are found on a widespread basis in the forest. So usually there's a suite of about 8 species that we find when we look at forests in remote parts of rural Minnesota.
I've read about the Amynthis species moving in and threatening the Great Lakes region. I'm not sure whether they've reached Minnesota yet.
Yeah, Amynthis are earthworms from Asia, and it's a very big genus. There are over 140 species. We've found 2 or 3 species in Minnesota, but we have not found them out in the forest yet. We've found them only in the city. They seem to have a different route of distribution, and we've found them in areas that have had mulch applied. And I've even heard of cases where they were found in mulch that was purchased at stores, you know, like Home Depot, where you just buy big bags of mulch. Yeah. We had them pop up in Loring Park in Minneapolis, and they came in with a load of mulch that was used in the garden there. That was actually Amynthis agrestis, which is the crazy worm. It's quite big. It's about 8 or 10 inches long, and it's big around as your little finger. And they killed all the plants in one part of the garden because they tore up the soil so much that the root systems were destroyed, and these dead plants are just sitting there on the surface. Oh. You could just lift them up. They weren't even connected to the soil. Fortunately, that species is sensitive to soil freezing, so it died out, especially last winter when we didn't have any snow in southern Minnesota, and it was below zero for 25 days, and the soils got quite cold, and earthworm populations were knocked back. But I've noticed throughout the summer that they've recovered, you know, because they had laid eggs in the soil, and eggs are much more resistant to these extreme temperature events, and so they are recovering. But, yeah, sometimes a deep soil freeze will kill the adults, but not the eggs.
Does Amynthis pose a special threat?
Yeah, because they become so abundant, they have swarming behavior, their biomass can become extraordinarily large, there can be millions of them per acre, and they could cause a much greater magnitude of damage than the European earthworms if they become established. And because there's a lot of species, some of them are probably better adapted to a cold climate than others. You know, it's only a matter of time before we get one that's well adapted to cold climates that comes from northern Asia, and it will add to the damage caused by European earthworms.
I'd like to remind our listeners, this is Conservation Corner on 99.5 FM, KTWH LP, Two Harbors, Minnesota. I'm your host, Emily Nelson, and today I'm talking with Dr. Lee Frelick from the University of Minnesota's Center for Forest Ecology, and we're talking about invasive earthworms in Minnesota's forests. You mentioned that earthworms can be spread through their use as fishing bait. Are there other ways in which they're spread?
Well, fishing bait is the main way they get out into remote areas like the boundary waters. You know, we find invasion fronts moving away from campsites, and it's obvious what happened in cases like that. But they also get around in sod, in nursery stock, you know, in ball and burlap nursery stock and potted plants. Anytime you transplant something and move that ball of soil to a different place, you could be taking earthworms and introducing them to a new location. And I think a lot of people have done that without knowing it when they take some plants from their garden in the Twin Cities and take it to their cabin in the North Woods, and they didn't even know they were bringing exotic earthworms with them.
Sure, that sounds really difficult to control.
Yeah, it is difficult, and you would have to sift all the soil, you know, to get the eggs of the earthworm out, which can be 1 or 2 millimeters long for some of these species, and then you would destroy the plant. So, yeah, it's very hard to control the movements of earthworms. They go wherever people go. Can't move very much by themselves, but people move them everywhere. I mean, they only move about 20 to 30 feet a year by themselves. And at that rate, it would take them 10,000 years to move across the state. You know, if they had been introduced, say, in the Twin Cities, it would be thousands of years to move across the state. But we move them everywhere.
So what kind of measures can we take to reduce their spread?
Well, not leaving extra fishing bait behind, taking it back out of the woods with you, mm-hmm. would help a lot. And you never know what new species of worms might be in there. Yeah, so it's important to take live bait back out of the woods, throw it in the trash, or take it back to the Twin Cities and dump it in your yard there, because it's already infested with, to the maximum degree, with every invasive species there is, and you can't even add to the damage there. But that's one way, and another way would be to ensure that mulch and other routes of distribution, you know, that they just don't have the worms in them.
How about composting with worms? Should we worry about using that compost to enrich our soils if we've used worms?
Well, it is possible to do composting with worms and not cause damage, because there are species of worms that can't tolerate the climate of Minnesota, like red wigglers, which are commonly used for composting. Mm-hmm. Can only survive the winter when they're in the compost pile because of the heat generated by the decomposition in the compost pile, and it's been shown that they die if they're just a few feet away from the compost pile. So unless global warming turns us into an almost tropical place, you know, they're not going to be able to survive in Minnesota.
Yeah.
So using those species of worms rather than others that might be able to tolerate the cold and might then escape mm-hmm. can still be a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it worth taking measures to remediate an area that's already been infested with earthworms?
If they're already earthworm present, we don't have any really good ways of reducing earthworm abundance on a large scale. Mm-hmm. At a small scale, you can. You can put, say, pine needle mulch or bark mulch on a small garden, and the acidity will kill most of the worms. You'll end up with a much lower density. But that's not something you'd do on a large scale throughout the forests in Minnesota. In golf courses, they've used a variety of methods over the years to get rid of earthworms on greens, because the little castings that worms make would affect the way the ball rolls.
And
they used to have children pick the worms up on rainy days mm-hmm. when they come to the surface. For a while, they were using a lot of different poisons to kill the worms. And now one thing they're doing is using coarse sand. Just put some coarse sand on the green. And this is sand that has not been tumbled or polished at all, like not beach sand from the Great Lakes, you know, which is very rounded when you look at it under a microscope. This is coarse sand that has extremely sharp edges, and the worms ingest it and it slices them up inside and they die. But that's not something you'd want to do on a large scale either, because just think of all the native insects and other types of worms other than earthworms and mm-hmm. Centipedes and beetles and all sorts of things that belong in the soil that are responsible for its function that would be killed if you did that on a large scale.
Right.
Do you think there are any potential biological controls?
There may be. We haven't really looked yet, but mm-hmm. obviously these worms in Europe don't reach anywhere near the densities they reach here, which is very typical for invasive species to reach a much higher density on their new continent, you know, just like buckthorn. You only find one per acre in Europe, and here, you know, there's thousands per acre. So it may be that we'll eventually find mm-hmm. some sort of biocontrol, but that lies in the future.
While I was preparing for this interview, I did a lot of reading on the Great Lakes Worm Watch website, and I was so impressed with both the breadth and the depth of knowledge that's presented there. Were you involved in the creation of that site?
Well, my first PhD student that I had who studied earthworms, Cindy Hale, started that website, and we had a National Science Foundation grant to study the impacts of earthworms in maple forests at that time, and we got a supplemental grant to develop a public education and outreach tool, and that's what she did with that grant, was to launch the Great Lakes Worm Watch.
Yeah, I think it's one of the best websites I've seen as far as public outreach.
Yeah, there's a lot of good information there.
For our listeners, if you'd like to check out the Great Lakes Worm Watch, you can find it at www.nrri.umn.edu/worms. And you can read all about earthworms there in Minnesota and the Great Lakes region. You can learn how to identify them and learn more about forest ecology in the region. And then you can find out how you can join in the research if you're interested. Again, that website is www.nri.umn.edu/worms. What has been the focus of your research?
Well, my research has, well, I don't know whether to call it focus, but because it's very broad, but I've looked at the impacts on maple forests, especially on the plants, the native plants and the native soil fauna, how earthworms impact that, at the ecosystem level, how they impact the function of the ecosystem in terms of nutrient cycling and water. And so that's where we discovered that they cause drought sensitivity in the trees, and they also reduce nutrient availability. And we've also looked at, with various graduate students, their impact on wildlife habitat. There was a graduate student, Scott Loss, who showed that oven birds are negatively impacted by earthworms because they change the structure of the forest floor, and oven birds build their nest on the forest floor. And now we're proposing to do research to compare earthworms in Europe to earthworms here and see why is it that in Sweden earthworms create the most fertile soils in the whole country, whereas here they, in our forests in Minnesota, they decrease the fertility of the soil. And why is that? Mm-hmm. And so we've sent in a proposal to start that research.
Do you have any ideas for future studies?
Oh, there's lots of ideas for future studies about how they might impact different types of plants. Mm-hmm. For example, orchids require a certain species of fungus as a symbiotic partner in order to germinate. And there's some preliminary evidence that earthworms impact some of those fungi negatively, so that germination of orchids would be impaired in the future. We need to know a lot more about that. We need to know a lot more about their impact on drought and their impact on aquatic ecosystems, because some of these nutrients, like the phosphorus, when the worms invade, that leaches out. And the question is, does that end up in the aquatic ecosystem, and will it cause eutrophication of the water and, you know, even change the fish communities? So is the impact really going to be felt on the entire landscape, including wetlands and lakes, and not just in the forest? And I think the answer is probably yes, but we only have a little bit of evidence for that. And then their impact on the carbon cycle. So there's some papers that have been published that claim that earthworms are causing big increases in emission of carbon from soils to the atmosphere, and others that say just the opposite, they're sequestering carbon. And we have no way of resolving that debate without more information. I think that none of those studies took into account the fact that there are invasive earthworms that are eating forest floors over vast acreages in many places in the world. And that hasn't been looked at, whether there's a net emission of carbon there. It seems like it would be almost impossible for there not to be an increase in emissions for newly invading earthworms. Mm-hmm. And so we need to look at that more.
Well, it's about time to wrap up. So do you have any last thoughts you'd like to share?
Well, earthworms are the master group of invasive species. It's a whole group. They do many different things to the soil and to the ecosystem. They regulate other invasive species, you know, that may come into the ecosystem. So I think Darwin was right in the book that he wrote in 1881, saying that earthworms are one of the most important players in the history of the world. And I think that was correct. And it's a very hot area of research right now. I kind of pioneered that, and just a couple other people over 15 years ago pioneered it. Now it's a very hot area of research, and we're going to learn a lot about earthworms and how they run the world in the next couple decades.
Thanks again for talking with me.
Sure, you're welcome.
That was Dr. Lee Frelick from the University of Minnesota's Center for Forest Ecology, and he was sharing information about invasive earthworms in Minnesota forests. Thanks again for listening to Conservation Corner, and this program was produced by Lake County Soil and Water Conservation District with funding from the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment. I'm Emily Nelson, and I hope you have a wonderful afternoon.